This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the Business Psychos and does not reflect the viewpoints of their current or former employers or clients. Thank you.
It's the Business Psychos, and today we're going to talk it out. The podcast about what execs shouldn't talk about. Connecting executives and those who aspire. We're here to have a conversation, yeah, we're going to light the fire. It's the Business Psychos. Yeah. The Business Psychos.
Welcome, I'm Katie Bickford.
And I'm Mary Schaub.
And we are the Business Psychos. These are candid conversations. Out in the open about the promise, possibility, and privilege of professional life, while also managing the sometimes, well, oftentimes dehumanizing downside. So this is our third episode, and I am loving this. And Mary, you are a masterclass in operational excellence and strategy. On a scale of 1 to 10, it's a wow.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm good. I also am just, I'm loving this process. There's lots to learn. I'm enjoying it. I love talking to you. I love talking about the kinds of things that we're sharing here. Personally, my partner and I went out for a night in New York City last weekend. We went to see a comedy show. I'm a big fan of stand-up comedy. One of my favorite comedians is Anthony Jeselnik. It was a great show. I highly recommend it. And you know, Katie, it's nice to get out. Still a little bit after the COVID times, it's super easy to stay at home. Netflix has everything you want to see. And it's nice to get out with humanity, see something live.
Where did you see him?
At the Beacon Theater in New York City.
When I was in New York, loved going to Comedy Cellar.
Oh yeah. And a lot of good comics will just turn up. You just have no idea.
It was magic. If you're a comedy fan, being down there, eating your piece of frozen cheesecake for $23.
Two drink minimums. And
Yeah. Real great ride there. My new hobby is making memes, which has meant your burden is receiving an onslaught.
They are amazing. It is a new art form. And you are just tapped into the zeitgeist with them. They make me laugh. And our audience is loving them already. We're already starting to send them out. Of our socials. So today, Katie, we're going to talk about performance and culture. There's no shortage of cute articles about high-performing cultures. It's something that's spoken about a lot. And this is an example of a topic where I wonder to myself, if people are saying what they mean and meaning what they say. And I'm not trying to talk in riddles here. I just find a lot of what is written on this topic to be very vague.
High-performing. In air quotes, it's a safe notion to hang your hat on. At face value, it means nothing. It's one of those professional beige spaces where you can say something that postures as elite while you're saying nothing. Who's going to disagree with you on a statement about the importance of a high-performing culture? I mean, what's the position? I'm pro-low-performing culture.
But, you know,
and what does high performance even mean?
Everyone's co-opting it, right? Like, everyone's recycling it through LinkedIn. And then in companies, everyone has their thumb on it. But what are we really talking about when we say high performing? And should employees even care? When we come back, we're going to unpack it here on Business Psychos. Today on Business Psychos, we're discussing performance and culture and whether you should care about it. Katie, this is a fun one. Maybe we should start with a definition. I wasn't surprised that there are quite a few definitions online, most of them vague. The gist being, and I'm gonna read here, a high-performing culture is where employees perform well because they are engaged, valued, and continually learning. This gives their work a greater purpose, instilling in a continuous improvement mindset and a dedication to the organization's mission. Blah, blah. Katie, what do you think?
Corporate beige talk track. What we're talking about producing, you know, are we talking about producing income, products and services for the market? Are we talking about fulfillment of human potential?
I agree. I don't love this definition. I would even argue that there are plenty of places where employees perform well, regardless of their engagement or whether they're continuously learning, for that matter. I don't think dedication to an organization's mission is necessarily critical for every role. And to be honest, many organizations struggle to link their mission to most or many of the roles. So what are we really talking about here? Execs want people to perform well consistently, meaning in terms of productivity and the quality of work. They want people ultimately who are going to take personal responsibility for the company exceeding its objectives. So it's obvious why an organization would want that.
I have a lot of pride that I mask under a nonchalant pride in the results that occurred under my tenure. But there's great work that receives no market validation and vice versa. And this gets back to recognizing the game we're playing in professional life. So factors outside of our control shape our destiny. So timing for a product or service, positioning of the product or service relative to other available offerings, macro market conditions, luck is a catch-all for all the other factors, and other talented people or the lack of them. The constructive focus is to consider that we pick companies if we can that are doing something interesting, where there's a large addressable market and where there are other smart people, preferably smarter than we are. Let's get smart about how we position ourselves. Stop taking it personally, play the game, read the room. When I started out in my career, there was this guy, and I'm going to rename him Paul Papadopoulos.
There's a real Paul Papadopoulos out there. This is not you.
Yes, please.
There's going to be someone out there.
I didn't see him a lot. He was a regional peer. This is for a very large company. And I was working and working and working and every single second of the day working. I'd show up at these regional meetings and there'd be Paul Papadopoulos who would say, like, listen, you only have to work 2 hours a day. And he had all these principles. So we'll call them the Paul Papadopoulos principles. Which he said, look, you got to play where you can win. You've got to realize a lot of this job is a bunch of fluff. And so you don't do the fluff. You play the game well. And then when it would become his time to speak and when it's time to present and be seen in leadership, he would stand up and he would just put on a show. Just excellence in execution and working as a team and using strategy. At the time, I remember finding it improbable. And honestly, I didn't learn the lesson for quite a long time. Because he kept doing really well. He kept being recognized as somebody who was a great culture fit. These are dynamics that are crazy making for people if you get played by them. But what we're talking about is let's become aware of them, actually be better at playing them, choosing our battles, and working effectively and constructively. So there's an aspect of performance for high performing people to just give yourself a break to realize like great work can ultimately sometimes yield no measurable output and vice versa. You know, I think that's one of the things you find in your career. Of course, there's also the aspect of performance, which is that success involves people who are going to not just solve today's problems, but anticipate the challenges that are coming up and innovate ahead of competitors.
That hits on exactly what employers are looking for. I wonder whether employees should care whether a culture is high performing or not. And what does that feel like to be in a high-performing culture? So let's take a culture which is so-called high-performing, but toxic, right? Because I think what something feels like, it's hard high-performing how that feels. So like let's look at that with this dimension of toxicness. Katie, you and I have both seen these types of companies before.
Indeed. So in a high-performing toxic culture, these are usually places where revenue is the absolute focus. And these companies, they attract and they pay for not only smart people, but politically savvy people who know how to make money for the company and also know how to play the game. And these are highly competitive jobs, investment banking and sales. These jobs are demanding intellectually, emotionally, and physically. Late hours, colleagues that have sharp elbows, probably lots of competition, which keeps type A people on their toes and continuously producing. If you have the constitution for this kind of environment and you're smart enough to compete, you know, I say go for it. The money is great. It's very likely that that experience in terms of its hyper acceleration will support your professional growth. But I think there's other considerations, such as the impact on physical deterioration. There's a corrosive effect of hedonism replacing joy, and other things like killing off the quality of connections and relationships. These environments tend to be hyper masculine, very intense. They can be really fun. They can be scary and also incredibly rewarding and exciting.
Absolutely. I have found these places might refer to their culture as work hard, play hard. They often say that in the interview process,
yeah,
which is very attractive to type A talent. They love the prestigious name, the salary. I'm thinking of Oliver Stone's movie Wall Street as an example here. In my mind, yeah, these places are great when you're starting out in your career. They're going to encourage continuous learning because it's pretty much required to compete in these places. You'll be surrounded by a lot of the super smart people. And if you're lucky, you might find yourself in an apprenticeship type role with a senior leader who takes you under their wing. And if you're smart, self-driven, and can tolerate challenging environments, I think this is a great place to work, at least for a little while. In my experience, at some point in your life, you may start to evaluate whether the trade-offs are worth it anymore. Maybe you want to start a family and the long hours and travel conflict with that, or the stress and its effect on your physical and mental health aren't sustainable. Or frankly, you might just get burned by the toxic side of things, like Bud Fox, the character in the movie Wall Street, and just flame out.
I say have an exit strategy long in advance, because the odds are you'll reach a point where the trade-offs no longer work for you. I had a high-flying, uber wealthy mentor. This mentor took an interest in me and had a dinner, and we had a moment. This is somebody who didn't do a lot of mentorship. So there was this kind of sense of gravity, not a lot of emotional quotient. Very intense. We're sitting at the dinner. He looks at me straight in the eye and says, "You can never have enough money."
Wow.
And here was somebody, and this is where the details would make the story a lot more satisfying. In that moment, it was a moment of reckoning, because I thought, uh-oh, like, this is a bridge to nowhere. If this is somebody who doesn't have enough money, this is this, like, thing that never satisfies itself and is, like, has an endless appetite that will just consume your life. So, you know, the thing about performance in these high-performing, high-grind environments, it's never enough and it never ends and you're always going to want more. So we've covered the topic of these high-performing toxic cultures, at least for this episode. So now let's consider, like, if it's toxic and low performing, then I think we're both of the position stay away. And I can't imagine anyone listening to this podcast is vibing in this type of environment, but let's discuss it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're masochistic. I'm thinking about the fictitious company Waystar and the amazing show Succession. So many great scenes in that show and a lot of absurdly stupid decisions. It felt to me like a lot of the characters in that show were playing work, especially the Nepo babies and their hangers-on, like the great character Cousin Greg and Tom Womgans. It's an environment which values political acumen, specifically how to stay in the good graces of psychopath Logan Roy and his power deputies. Now, I do think Logan was smart, but I'd argue he valued loyalty over intelligence. For me, these are the most dangerous places to work. Even if the money is good, they are likely to burn you out at some point, with everyone playing the part of both villain and victim at some point. When we come back, we're going to talk about performance in healthy environments.
So we are back talking about cultures and performances and why employees should care. We've covered performance in high and low performing toxic cultures. Now we're going to talk about performance in healthy environments. So by healthy, we mean no or minimal politics of backstabbing, abuse, and mental stress. I don't know that there's any environment that lacks some of the dynamics that have to do with putting a bunch of people together. But what we're talking about are environments where people tend to actually care about each other. So, Mary, what do you think about a healthy environment, which is also low performing?
Dunder Mifflin, The Office. It's a great example here. My opinion, and note, I love the show and I love all the characters, but they are mediocre people doing mediocre jobs at a mediocre company. And I love that it's a paper company in an increasingly digital world, and no one until the very end of the series talks about that or is particularly worried about it.
I love how work isn't central to the plot. Yeah, it's the interpersonal politics. Everyone on the show is doing okay and getting along for the most part.
It's a comfortable place to work. No one's stretching themselves here. They have fun and generally like each other. I've worked at a Dunder Mifflin before. Everyone lives locally and hangs out after work. No one is making a ton of money or going anywhere. Your manager has probably been there in their role for about 15 years, and their boss has been in their job for probably 15 years. You see long tenures and limited growth potential, which makes everyone feel safe. Nothing revolutionary is happening here, and that's okay. You work with people you like, you aren't challenged, but you aren't stressed either. And you know what? If the pay enables you to live the life you want, this is a great option. No shame. Maybe you're Pam, who's happy to be a receptionist at Dunder Mifflin because she can spend most of her day practicing her art, which is her real passion. Or you're Dwight, and you own a local beet farm, and the paper job helps pay the bills and gets you out of the house.
Disillusionment with high-performing and toxic environments has resulted in low-pressure and zero-growth cultures like Dunder Mifflin having more appeal to the younger generations like Gen Z. About 5 years ago, I'd been working in high growth, really high pressure, intense tech environments for 15 years after I'd spent time in corporate. I'd moved over to tech. I have this memory of that, maybe it might be longer than 5 years ago. I overheard someone say, "I think I'm done with working in startups and growth companies. I want to work for a huge corporation where I'm just a number." I remember this because working in tech had been this holy grail with the promise of the glory of lucrative exits, you know, rationalizing extraordinarily punishing hours and pressure. It's another episode where we discuss the dilution of equity caused by VC funding and the perplexing lack of understanding employees have about this as they work themselves to burnout. But you know, that's another episode. But Gen Z haven't bought into the hustle culture like boomers and Gen X did. And in general, the younger generations are valuing their time and mental health right at the beginning of their careers. They decided the hustling and grinding for the big paycheck wasn't worth it. I think it's great that they've already figured this out.
Absolutely. And we'll come back to that a little bit later. I first want to talk about high performing and healthy. This is the employer we all say we want to work for and what every company says it is. And so I'm imagining, you know, the fictitious Stark Industries, you know, Iron Man Stark Industries here. These companies are going to be highly innovative. They may even be disruptors. They proactively compete for top talent and have data-driven incentive and reward programs aligned to their strategic metrics. So, Katie, is this the holy grail of workplaces? Is this the kind of place everyone should try to get hired into?
Well, look, to continue with your analogy, you're definitely not if you're a Dwight or a cousin Greg, which, by the way, has any entertainment ever captured that persona as accurately as Succession did?
Cousin, it's so
satisfying.
I almost want to do a podcast just on Succession. We're going to continue to bring that example into the show because it's just brilliant.
Let's talk about it. I would say they do not want to work there. Maybe they would like the idea of working there, but actually doing the job in that type of culture where there is accountability and responsibility and politics are not tolerated or not the operating principles of the organization, not so much fun for highly political people. And there are highly political people. Healthy cultures have healthy relationships with hierarchy. And some folks don't like this. Some folks want the power, but not the accountability and responsibility. There's another facet of disparities within a single organization when it comes to culture and standards. So if your standards as a leader for your organization are different than the surrounding organization. As a leader, you act as a retaining wall against hostile forces, and this is not a sustainable way to operate. It's really important to establish standards. They are clearly invested in terms of articulating defined values that are upheld across the board. So this has to do with hiring people and establishing what your cultural rubric is. Otherwise, a great culture can become a monoculture, and then it winds up losing its dynamism. Establish the values like, say, curiosity. Test for that in the interview process, the actual soft skills, the cultural skills that you want, teamwork, the putting the organization over the individual, whatever it is, that you're establishing what those things are. And so when we're hiring people, we're looking at skills separately, and then we're assessing the culture, but not in terms of this thing of like, it's a culture fit, because that's where a lot of bias hides, the people that we're comfortable with. Having been a sales leader, you want to talk about nepo babies. When the EO is on vacation and meets someone they just like, or someone in their family needs a job, sales being considered the lowest hard skill facet of an organization, I have been on the front lines of fending off those types of situations. If you have someone who is, you know, has some kind of elite credentials or political alignments that is not working in their given department, sales is absolutely the place where they try to push that person to avoid having to manage them out and take a fall for whatever's going to happen for creating any bad blood with this person. So, as far as nepo babies and politics are concerned, I just have to give a shout out for having won some and lost some in the great wars against unmerited nepotism. I've also hired some nepos that wound up being really great. A high-performing culture, probably one of the most important things is the relationship with accountability and responsibility. In a healthy culture, everyone is eager to do their part and they're less interested in the politics in the organization.
When we come back, we're going to wrap up and offer our closing thoughts on performance and culture.
I'm glad we talked about high-performing cultures from an employee perspective. It's often assumed that everyone should aspire to work in these places, and that's not necessarily true.
Yes, and also including the toxic to healthy dimensionality, I think, is a key part of the puzzle, because there are trade-offs. The saying nature of the beast comes to mind here.
Do your research to figure out what kind of performance culture your organization may be and determine if it's a match for your values and priorities. And once again, to the point that Mary's brought up, is that there's no shame in this. Professional success is so tied to aligning yourself appropriately with the situations and the environment and to the best of your ability. Even low performing toxic cultures have people that fit in there. No judgment.
It's worth noting that cultures change too. When I was online researching this topic, I tried to find real companies which were known for being both healthy and high performing. A few well-known tech players came up. These were places which used to have reputations for being amazing places to work. Think free food, unlimited vacation, bring your dog to work. But over the years, they've grown and their cultures have evolved. For example, one tech company on the list used to have a reputation for being a great place to work, but now is being called out for their dehumanizing way of firing people by email.
As times change, what is tolerated is also something that is an ever-evolving notion about what we believe is acceptable as far as standards of a working culture. It's important to evaluate where you are in your life. That might mean the kind of trade-offs you are willing to make. And know yourselves first. You know, what are your values when negotiating, you know, prioritizing title, money, lifestyle? I know for me, I prioritize money, and some people prioritize title. Learning how to actually to trade by asking and wanting all of it, but making concessions in the places that you care about.
And then you commit and you stay firm to what you signed up for. So don't join Waystar and get upset that everyone there is mean and horrible. And to be clear, I am not at all condoning this kind of corporate culture. My recommendation is to be honest and sign up for what you can cope with today, and then reevaluate yourself and your employer over time, because both are likely to change. For example, I know some folks who are now empty nesters, and they're now looking for jobs that do have travel, and they want to be in the office because it suits them now that their kids are out of the house. So things change.
This is fun today.
Culture is a great topic that I think we could talk all day about. I think we will come back to it again and again. It's a pretty key facet to the workplace.
Well, we'll wrap up the show for today. Hit us up. We want to hear from you.
If you liked what you heard today, please like, share, and subscribe. Bye for now. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please like, subscribe, and share with other psychos you know. We'd also love to hear from you, so hit us up on our socials. You can find us on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook under @BusinessPsychosPod. Bye.